The Columbia Workshop, under the direction of Irving Reese.
Hello!
Signal Man by Charles Dickens.
Is he stone deaf?
You were calling to the signalman down in the cut, sir.
Yes. But he simply stands there and stares up at me as though I were a ghost.
Oh, it's him as is the ghost, sir, in the manner of speaking. I wouldn't trade jobs with him for a lunch pile full of shillings come Saturday night.
Do you work for the railway, too?
That I do, sir. Wiggins is the name. I'm a track walker.
Ought to be plenty of exercise in that.
Yes, sir. Even nights I walk east. Odd nights, I walks west. I'm just a going on duty. And if you wants to come along with me, sir, I'll show you the way down into the cut so you can speak to the signal man.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
Oh, don't mention it, sir. Ain't no trouble. Right this way, sir. There's some steps cut out of the rock. Mind you don't slip now.
I'll be careful. You go ahead. I'll follow.
Righto. You'll be writing this up as a story for the papers, I'll wager.
Who told you I was a writer?
Nobody. But who else would be fool enough to go about risking his neck climbing down into such a place as the cut? Here's a longish step, sir. Now, if you hold onto that branch.
Right. You seem to know this path very well.
Why wouldn't I? I up to make it. 10 years back. Here's a loose stone. It rocks a bit. Me and Perky, you was me mate on the job at the time, figured it would save us a deal of walking.
It's a rather stiff climb down.
That it is. But it's the quickest way out of the cut. Unless you climb here, you got to walk down the cut a mile below the town before you can get onto the road. Then you got the mile back to walk.
How about the opposite direction?
To the west?
Yes.
Oh, you couldn't go that way, no how, sir. The tracks going west run right into the tunnel. Into the tunnel. Hang on, sir. Here comes the express. And she keeps the machine just as quick as the soldier line.
That was like sitting on the tail of an earthquake. Does that signal man have to listen to that sort of uproar all day?
About 8 times a day, sir.
Well, no wonder he didn't answer when I called to him. If he's been on the job a few years, he must be as deaf as a post.
Oh, no, sir. His hearing's all right. He has to pass an examination every so many months to all his posts. Now, you watch his source from here on. It's wet from the water seeping out from between the rocks.
There isn't much light, is there?
No, sir. It's always dark down here at the bottom. Except for an hour or two in the middle of summer when the sun is direct overhead. The rest of the year, you've got to keep the lamps lit on account of the walls being so steep and high.
One might just as well live in a cave or a mine.
Here we are. Mind the puddle. Well, I'll leave you here, sir. Just walk along the track till you comes to the signal man's house. Well, you needn't worry. None about the engines running you down, and there won't be another one along for a bit.
Thank you, Mr.
Wiggins is the name, sir. There were 2 G's in it. Gosh, you wish to mention it in your story.
I'll remember. What's the signal man's name?
Braxton, sir.
What sort of chap is he?
No man on the line knows his work better.
Does he mind having visitors?
I shouldn't think so. He's always willing to pass the time of day, so to speak, when I come by. Educated, like he'd been to school. Or done a lot of reading in maybe books without pictures in them.
Is he old or young?
Oh, old. Ah, to say about that, sir. Guess he was middling young and middling old, if you know what I mean. His hair's turning gray about the edges, but he ain't got no wrinkles.
What did you mean when I spoke of being taken for a ghost and you said it was the signal man who was the ghost?
Oh, I was just a talking, sir. He does look terrible pale and death-like. Well, that's from living down here with no sunlight and it being so damp and all. Just being in the dark and twilight all the time do that to any man. Made his face white, like the wax they make altar candles from.
I see.
Well, look here, mister.
Here. Here you are, Mr. Wiggins.
Huh? Oh, what's this for, sir?
A couple of glasses of ale at the pub when you get back.
Oh, thank you kindly. I'll drink your ale, sir.
Thanks. And thanks for your kindness, Wiggins.
Oh, don't mention it, sir, for nothing at all. Good day to you.
Good day. How do you do? Mr. Braxton? My name is Darkin. I'm a journalist.
Darkin?
I'm doing some articles on all sorts of odd things.
You think I'm odd?
Well, no, that isn't the idea at all. But your work, it's different and not many people know about it. I think it would make interesting reading.
Perhaps.
If you just answer a few questions.
Why not?
Why do you stare at me like that?
Was I staring?
Yes. You look at me as though you had a dread of me.
I was doubtful whether I'd seen you before.
Where would that be?
There. By that red lamp at the mouth of the tunnel.
What would I be doing there?
I'd give a great deal to know.
I was never there, I'll swear to that. This is the first time I've ever been down here. And I wouldn't be here now if a chap named Wiggins hadn't shown me the way. Don't you believe me?
Yes. Yes, I believe you. But this time it was you who called out, "Hello, below there."
What do you mean, this time?
Just that, this time.
Why, yes, I cried out something to that effect.
Not to that effect. Those were your very words. I know him well.
Well, I don't remember, but if you say so, no doubt that was what I said.
Why?
Why?
Yes, why did you use those words?
Well, because I saw you below and I said, "Hello, below."
No other reason?
Dash it all, man. What other reason could I possibly have had?
You had no feeling they were conveyed to you in any supernatural way?
Of course not.
Very well. But you must never call out those precise words again, sir. Never again. I beg of you.
I don't suppose I shall ever have any reason to. So you may set your mind at ease, Mr. Braxton.
Thank you. You probably think I'm a bit touched in the head.
No, of course not.
Perhaps I am. It wouldn't be strange, would it, after all the lonely years I've spent at this solitary and dismal post?
I suppose a man gets used to it.
Used to it? Aye. It becomes part of you. I've been confined between these narrow walls for so long, I feel strange when I go up above and into the town. I feel insecure without them, open to attack and danger from all sides. I feel easier when I can descend once again into this cavern.
I can understand that. They say that criminals who have been surrounded by prison walls for a number of years are practically panic-stricken upon their release.
Yes. So I would imagine. My prison isn't beautiful, and yet I have a strange affection for these dripping wet walls of jagged stone. I love the dim half-light.
But the eternal damp and the cold wind that comes out of a tunnel, and the rattle and roar and shriek of the passing train.
I don't mind them. Did you ever read about St. George and the Dragon?
Of course.
I sometimes think of myself as St. George. The mouth of the tunnel is the entrance to the dragon's cave. Every morning at 8, he rushes out for his breakfast. I can see his one gleaming white eye coming through the dark, growing larger and larger as he approaches.
And like St. George, do you try to stop him?
Oh, no. Although I could by hanging this red lantern on that post. He's afraid of red light.
Terrified.
If he sees a red lantern, he stops dead in his tracks, and the ground shakes with his trembling.
What does your dragon eat, Braxton?
I don't know. His feeding ground is somewhere out through that cut in the level country. He goes rushing out, throwing fire and smoke from his nostrils and rattling his metal scales on the tracks. 2 hours go by, and he comes roaring back into his cave again.
The same dragon?
The same. According to the timetable, it's number 48 that comes out and number 32 that goes back, but I know his voice. It's the very same dragon. He comes out and goes back 4 times every day. He went out just a bit ago.
Yes, I saw and heard him as I was climbing down into the cut.
He's coming back any moment now. Put your hand here on the track. Feel that vibration? Now listen. Hear him? One day his great weight will break through the crust of the earth and the whole world will fall into the hole. His breath is so hot, it withers the grass along his path. He's screamed. All the demons run back to Hades and to the real.
Lord, man, you need to get away from here. Holiday anywhere. Your nerves are stretched to the snapping point. You'll have a breakdown.
I can't go away. If I do, there'll be a death for someone. And I won't be there to stop it.
But look here, old man. It's all very well to have a sense of duty. And probably there's a great responsibility on your shoulders doing this job. But after all, the man who took your place might be just as efficient.
Efficient? Yes. But would he be able to see the ghost? The ghost who warns of danger? Would his eyes be able to pierce the dark and the smoke and read the warnings of the gray ghost who lives in the tunnel?
What are you talking about, Braxton? Oh, you're shaking like a leaf. You're chilled through. And so am I. Let's go in your switch house and get out of this infernal wind.
Very well. Come, this way.
A lot better. You've got a snug little place here, Braxton.
Yes. I'll put a few more coals on the stove.
Looks as though you've done some reading. Heavy reading at that. Economics, history.
What is the time?
A French grammar and dictionary. Do you speak the language?
In a way, sir. I've studied it myself. I pronounce the word as I judge they'd be pronounced.
That's very interesting. Are you a university man?
Oh, no, sir. I've learned what little I know right here.
Really? Is that for you?
No, that's for the man at the other end of the tunnel. Here, take that chair so it's more comfortable.
Oh, thanks. Just what are your duties, Braxton?
They're very simple. I change the signal, trim the lights and turn the handle on the switch now and then.
No manual labor. Exactness and watchfulness are about all that is required of you.
Yes, sir. There are many long hours when I have nothing to do.
How do you pass the time?
Reading, studying, and thinking. It's a quiet life, sir. But I've gotten to the routine and it doesn't bother me anymore. It did at first. The first year I was down here, I used to climb up the rocks to the very top and sit in the sun when I had a free hour. But I gave that up.
Why?
And I kept listening for the sound of the telegraph instrument or the ring of the little bell they used to call me. It was on my mind all the time, you see. It wasn't much of a relaxation, so I gave it up.
I understand. A little while ago, Braxton, just before we came in here, you spoke of seeing a ghost.
Yes, sir. I've seen it many times and heard it, too.
Has it spoken to you?
Yes, sir.
When?
The first time was just about a year ago. Yes. Come to think of it, it was just a year ago this very night.
What did it say?
I was sitting here reading. And suddenly I heard a voice cry out, "Hello, below there!"
Where did this voice come from?
I wasn't sure, sir.
What did you do?
I started up and looked out of that door.
And saw no one.
Oh, I wish I had, sir. I wish I'd seen someone like you standing on the top of the cut as you did tonight. I suppose you thought I was ungracious when you first introduced yourself to me. I didn't mean to appear that way. It was because I was so startled that you'd use the very word the ghost used.
But what was it you saw that night?
I saw someone standing near the red light to the entrance to the tunnel. Then the voice cried out again. And it seemed hoarse with shouting. "Hello, below there! Look out!"
Well?
Well, I caught up my lamp, turned it on red, and ran toward the figure, calling, "What's wrong? What's happened? Where?"
Did it answer?
No, it just stood there outside the blackness of the tunnel. I ran right up to it, but as I stretched out my hand to pull it by the sleeve, it vanished.
It was someone's idea of a lark. They ran into the tunnel.
No, no. As I ran into the tunnel, too, for a distance of 500 yards or more. I stopped and I held my lamp high overhead. I saw nothing, save the numbers that tell the measured distance, the wet stains stealing down the walls and trickling through the arch. I ran out again faster than I'd run in.
But dash it all, Braxton, in this day and age.
I know. I didn't believe then, either. I did go back to the office and telegraphed both ways down the line. An alarm has been given. Is anything wrong? The answer came back directly, both ways. All's well.
Surely that convinced you that the whole affair was a hoax, or else a figment of your own imagination. I can easily understand how it could have happened. That wind out there in this unnatural valley makes a wild harp out of the telegraph wires. It could be mistaken for a human or inhuman cry of distress. Then the shadow...
No, pardon me, sir. But that's not the end of the story.
Oh?
You see, 6 hours later, that same night, one of the most horrible accidents took place. Within 10 hours, the dead and the dying were brought through the tunnel and passed over the spot where the ghost had stood.
Yes, I remember that wreck. A frightful affair. Still, the appearance of your ghost on the same night may have had nothing to do with it. A remarkable coincidence.
Coincidence?
Yes. One that would make a very deep impression on you, or me, or any man. Such remarkable coincidences are continually taking place.
True. But the same coincidence seldom occurs twice. Rarely 3 times. And never, I believe, 4, 5, 6, or 7.
You mean that the same thing happened again?
Again and again and again. I said that particular accident was 1 year ago tonight. 6 or 7 months passed, and then one morning, just as the day was breaking, I saw the ghost again.
Where?
In the very same place. By the entrance to the tunnel.
Did it cry out again?
No. It was silent. It was leaning against the shaft of light from the signal lamp. Both hands before its face. Like this.
Did you go up to it?
No, I came in here and sat down, partly to collect my thoughts and partly because the sight had turned me faint. When I went to the door again, the daylight was above me. And the ghost was gone.
What happened after that appearance? Another accident?
Yes. That very day, the train came out of the tunnel. I noticed a flutter of white cloth. I saw it just in time to signal the engine driver with my flag. He put on his brakes, but the train drifted 150 yards or more down the cut.
You ran after it?
Yes, sir. As I ran, I could hear terrible screams and cries of anguish.
Well?
A young woman passing from car to car had stumbled and slipped down between. Her death was practically instantaneous. It was her companions who were screaming. He carried her in here.
A second coincidence.
There were others. I could name you 6 But it's the past week that's on my mind. Every night the ghost has appeared, but nothing has happened.
Every night?
Yes, I thought you were... the heat tonight when you called out.
He always appears at the same place?
Yes. At the danger light.
What does he do?
For the past 7 nights, he's stood there with his left arm flung across his face, as though to shut out some horrible sight. The right arm, he waves as though to say, for the Lord's sake, clear the way.
But he says nothing.
Oh, if that were only the case. No. For many minutes together, he calls to me. Hello there. Look out! Look out!
Look out for what?
Oh, if I only knew, sir. If I could but learn what he's warning me against. What's the danger? Where's the danger? What can I do?
Nothing, Braxton. Except wait for some further word from your strange guest.
But don't you understand? There's danger overhanging somewhere on the line. Some dreadful calamity is going to happen.
Why not do what you did the first time? Telegraph in both directions.
But they believe that I was mad because I could give no sane reason for the alarm. They discharged me. What else could they do? Perhaps I am mad.
No. No, I don't think so. You're not well. You're sick in body and mind from being down here so long. And the responsibility of your post has got on your nerves.
Oh, I wish I could believe that that is what's wrong.
You've got to believe it, Braxton. I tell you what. I'll look up some doctor who specializes in nervous disorders. And you must come with me to see him.
Would this doctor be able to explain the ringing of the bell?
The bell? What bell?
That bell. The one over my desk. The one that the other operators on the line use to summon me.
Your ghost rings that?
Frequently.
Tonight?
Tonight.
During the last few minutes?
During the last few minutes.
It hasn't rung, Braxton.
Do you mean to say you haven't heard it?
No.
But it's ringing now.
It's your imagination. The bell is not ringing. And probably it has never rung at any other time, except when some station wishes to communicate with you.
Listen.
I tell you, the bell...
No, no, no. Not the bell. Right. Ghost calling.
I hear nothing save the moan of the wind in the wild.
He's standing out there by the danger light, calling to me. Hello, below there. Look out. Look out.
Braxton, no one is out there.
When he first appeared, why didn't he tell me where the accident was to happen, if it must happen? Why didn't he say how it could be averted, if it could have been averted?
Braxton.
And the second time, when he hit his face, why didn't he say she's going to die? Let them keep her at home. Why?
Stop it, Braxton. Stop it, I say.
If he did that just to prove his warnings were true, so that I believe him the third time, and the fourth, and the fifth, why doesn't he warn me plainly now? God help me. Why doesn't he go with someone with a power to act and the power to understand?
Braxton, get hold of yourself.
I believe. I believe. What can I do? What can I do?
Listen to me, Braxton. Listen to me if you value your sanity. If you go on like this, you'll end up in an asylum. You must put the whole affair out of your mind.
How can I do that?
By realizing that you're an intelligent, painstaking, and exact individual. You've allowed a series of events to upset your balance until you're on the brink of utter collapse. You've got to get a grip on yourself. You've got to. For your own sake, and for the sake of your job, and the safety of those people whose lives depend on your performance of that job.
I know. Do you think I haven't told myself that over and over again?
But you've got to do something about it. Come. We'll walk down to the danger light and see what we can see. There's probably some very logical explanation for the appearance of your ghost. Some combination of light and shadow that creates an optical illusion. Come along, Braxton. I'll put an end to your ghost.
If you only could. If you only could.
Come along, Braxton. Come on.
Yes.
There's your voice, I'll wager. The wind moaning through those wires overhead. If you listen to that sound long enough, you might come to believe it to be a whole chorus of departed spirits. And there's your danger light, shining ruby and bright.
Yes, I trimmed it just before you came.
Do you see any sign of your ghostly visitor?
No, he isn't there.
See, without belief, he doesn't exist. I don't believe in him.
There's no such thing as the supernatural. Therefore, he cannot appear to you.
This is the spot where I first saw him.
Here?
No, not on the tracks. Over there to the side.
But that's impossible, Braxton. You couldn't see anyone there.
But I did.
But you couldn't. It's too dark. The rays from the lantern don't fall in that direction.
Nevertheless, I saw him plainly. He's where you always stand. He was here last night, as I told you. With his left arm flung across his face, as if to shut out some terrible sight, and waving the right arm frantically and calling, "Hello there! Look out! Look out!"
And you were standing where?
On the tracks. Directly in front of the signal house.
Very well, Braxton. I'm going to prove to you that you couldn't have seen him. I'm going to stand here on the spot you've designated. And I want you to walk down the track.
Yes, sir.
Stop when you come to the place where you were standing last night. And then turn around and see if you can see me.
Very well, sir.
I'm going to teach you to laugh at ghosts, Braxton.
This is the place, sir.
Good. Now, turn around.
Yes, sir.
Now, can you see me? Here in the shadows?
No, sir. I can't.
Well, doesn't that prove to you that you couldn't have seen anyone standing here last night or any other night?
Yes, sir. I guess it does.
And if you couldn't see the person, you couldn't see what he was doing, you couldn't see him wave at you or throw one arm across his face.
No, no!
Braxton! Braxton! Look out! Below there! Look out! Look out!
I can't understand how it happened.
Neither can I, sir. The light on the engine picked him up a quarter of a mile away. And I whistled. There was plenty of time for him to step off the track.
Didn't he make any move at all?
No, sir. He was staring up toward the danger light at the entrance to the tunnel. I don't think Braxton ever heard the whistle. I put on the air and I tried to stop, but you can't do it in that distance.
No, I know. It wasn't your fault, Grayson.
No, there wasn't anything I could do. I'm thankful I hadn't got that on my mind. It got me upset, sir.
You're not the only one. That journalist, Darkin, I think his name is, was up in the hospital for observation. They had to strap him in the bed.
I can understand the shock he must have had. My light picked him up just after I whistled. And he stood there, waving his arms at poor Braxton and yelling for him to get off the track.
Didn't Braxton see him?
He must have, sir. That's what I can't figure out. His back was turned my way, and he was staring right up the track toward the tunnel and this other chap.
That's odd.
Yes, sir. Just as the engine hit Braxton, this writer chap threw up his arm across his face as though he was trying to shut out the sight. But he kept waving the other arm, frantic-like.
Terrible accident.
Yes, sir. One that I won't forget in a long while. The train drifted into the tunnel for a few hundred yards before it could stop. But I'll never forget that writer chap's face as we passed. It was white as death. Standing there by that danger light, he looked just like a ghost. But he was still calling, "Below there! Look out! Look out! Look out!"
The Columbia Workshop has presented The Signal Man by Charles Dickens. Tune in next week at the same time for another workshop presentation. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.